Off the ball.
Rugby.
Off the ball.
Is it a podcast?
Radio show.
Oh, radio show. Awesome.
Don't worry, he knows who we are.
He's probably watching right now.
Wrong. Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome to episode 50 of The Racing Pod. I'm John Duggan. Johnny Ward is not with us this week because this is a special episode to mark half a century of podcasts dedicated to the sport of Kings and Off the Ball. We really have enjoyed you being on the journey with us over the last year. And this week we've got an exclusive interview with Davy Russell. Corkman Davy Russell is a household name, not only for Dancing with the Stars, but also before he retired. We all know he was one of Ireland's leading jump jockeys. He enjoyed a glittering career in the saddle, winning the National Hunt Jockeys Championship 3 times, the Aintree Grand National twice. He also rode 25 winners at the Cheltenham Festival, including the Gold Cup. Davy has just brought out a new book, his autobiography, which he's put together with the racing journalist Don McLean. It's a great read. And this 1 full-hour conversation with Davy Russell is exclusively for members. So be sure to sign up to get the whole thing by going to offtheball.com/join to subscribe. In this free-to-air segment you'll hear right now, Davy talks about winning the 2 Grand Nationals on Tiger Roll, injuries and the battle with his weight. We hope you enjoy. So Tiger Roll, 2018 Grand National, Ed Aintree, the race you've been watching since you were a kid. I remember Tony McCoy talking about don't push it when you won it, and he felt early on in the race, oh, this fella's got a chance here. Did you feel that with Tiger Roll? Oh, we're getting to rhythm here already.
Yeah, I felt that it was chancy enough with him because of the way he jumped. I didn't think he'd jump around, to be honest. I thought defences would take its toll on him, but I did feel that, you know, we were gone over Beecher's Brook, and he'd get a little bit lower at some, and then you'd be saying, oh jeez, if this fella doesn't lift up his legs now, I'm going to be standing beside him on the ground. And all of a sudden then he'd meet a fence and up he'd come. Like, he was very aware. He's a shocking bright horse.
A nimble horse.
Not so nimble, only that he was aware of how much he could get away with. And when he'd have to lift him, give a little bit more effort to jumping, but the running, like his running style, he was always running forward into the bridle for me. Now, the first year, it was pretty straightforward because he had only cheap pieces on, but the second year when he had blinkers on, he was free, he was tanked, like he tanked with me everywhere. Now, I mean running away, and what I was afraid of the second year was that he was overdoing it. But the first year he was just lovely on the bridle, like a normal race. You know, it was just, I could go wherever I wanted to go. And the further the race progressed, the easier he was going and the easier it was for him. And without asking for any effort, I was getting closer to the front of the pack. And even when in the position I was in, other horses around me seemed to be, you know, I was bossing the part of the race I was in, you know, I was boss of that area. You know, I could do whatever I wanted to do. All I had to do was keep him straight and keep him off the ground.
Are you thinking about it then? Are you thinking about, I'm going to win the Grand National here?
No, I've learned that lesson. Anytime that has happened to me in a race, anytime that has happened to me that I feel I'm going to win, it never transcribes that.
It's more about the process then.
Yeah, it was all about concentrating on me on every jump and just basically enjoying myself,
okay,
to be honest. Yeah.
So there's a horse called Pleasant Company, trained by Willie Mullins, flies to the finish, nearly catches you. Goes to a photo finish. You didn't know you'd won.
Yeah, that was I'd say now I could still be, I'd be in the Irish Sea, I'd say, because I knew there was something coming, and I knew it was coming fast. I didn't know what it was, but jeez, if I'd lost the Grand National, it would have been a tough one, and luckily I didn't. So he came flying, like, I mean, it was like I was standing still when he passed me at the line, and I was afraid of my life. I didn't know where the line was, because there isn't actually a physical line, like, it's just a doll that you're aiming for, and look, you know where the winning post is, but you're kind of just pushing towards that. And I was pushing, he wasn't stopping, but he just wasn't going any quicker. You know, he wasn't picking up and going. He was just plugging on. Like, he was just plugging on to one spot, and he was giving me enough without giving me everything. I knew he was minding himself, because I do feel that he was gawking at the water jump. Once I turned the elbow, he started looking at the water jump, and he was just looking at it and looking at it, and we got by it then, and I don't know whether he thought he was past the line or what he felt he had enough done anyway. But just as we came to the line, then the other horse just passed me, and as you could imagine, I'm up his neck pushing, and I could see this horse just go whoosh by me, and I didn't know where the line was. So everybody was telling me I held on, and then I just wanted to empty my mind. I didn't want any negative or positive thoughts, because I didn't want to build myself up for the fall, and I didn't want to be negative, you know, in where I just needed to stay level. So I emptied my mind completely of any thought. I had no thought in my head. I was looking straight out. I was just loosening the girth, putting a bit of water on him, making sure he was okay. And then, I had to check my number, because I didn't know what number it was. And then when my number was called, and I just realised that I'd won the race that I had all my life, like my whole life, from when I was 5 or 6 or maybe a bit older. I suppose Finn and Lily's age now, 9 or 10. Like, we're going out cutting the grass, building the fences, and as you see in the Grand National, they kicked the top off them. You know, the spruce goes flying, and you could imagine the piles of grass cut, and we just flicked the top off them. And like, I've dreamt about it. I've won on party politics. I've won on all them horses. I've ridden them all. I haven't taken it up until after the elbow, and all of a sudden, here I am, in the moment. Like, it was very surreal, to be honest.
He was number 13. It's quite emotive the way you describe it, Davey. And I even watched it back a few days ago, and you almost close your eyes, and you can see the tension in your hands.
Yeah, it was just something. It was just a feeling that maybe it was like the Gold Cup, but it was probably more.
Was there a circus afterwards then?
Yeah. So everything is happening then. You know, most importantly, I need to get him back in and weigh in to make it proper. But then I wanted to find Michael and Gordon and, you know, the crowd. And I remember, like, as a young lad, I was watching Cork Hurling and the O'Connor, and I don't know whether it was Jerry or
Ben,
but one of them was in the crowd, and I could see him in the crowd, and I was saying to myself, Jesus, they're shouting at me, whereas I'm usually shouting at them, cheering them on. And there was small little things like that, and you would get glimpses of it. And I remember Simon McGonigal always goes to Aintree as a kind of a break. He's Gordon's head man, and I can remember looking for Simon. I wanted to find Simon because he's a huge part of the team, and I could see Simon in the corner of my eye, and you know, the excitement and the thrill of walking into the parade and then meeting Michael and Anita and Eddie and all of them. You know, it was fantastic. Yeah,
he won it again then a year later, went back to back first horse since Red Rum. Was it more enjoyable a year later?
It was, because I knew what was ahead of me.
Yes.
I knew what, and there was no photo finish. It was very straightforward. Yeah, he had the blinkers on the second year, and they helped him concentrate that little bit more. But his jumping was, he actually made a couple of, not mistakes, but he skipped along the back of a couple of jumps, and it was only him would be able to do it, you know what I mean?
But still, you didn't think about it until you crossed the line?
No, because I was always aware during the race that I was doing too much. He was just running a little bit too much on my hands with the blinkers. But no, never felt, I was always of the opinion I needed to slow him down and relax him the whole way. I never felt like crossing the Mellon Road, which is, I stay here now, I'm going to win the Grand National. It was more so just get him to the last. And I knew then when I set him up for the last 10 strides away, it just felt like that I was meeting it on a good stride. And he landed and ran, and then I was aware of what happened last year. I needed to get him the whole way to the line, you know.
So talk about a couple of things, Davey. The first one is fear. Just very tough to learn the story and read the story about JT McNamara. I was there at Cheltenham in 2013 when he very sadly had that injury. catastrophic injury, and then he passed away 3 years later. He was your rival in the point-to-point circuit. This is a very dangerous profession, a sporting profession. Did fear come into your mind? Is something you had to get out of your mind? You have so many injuries. How did you manage the fact that this is dangerous?
It was never dangerous for me.
Okay.
Yeah, it still isn't. Do you know, to this day, like, I ride horses for fun. I enjoy it. You just want to be, you just want to be in fierce hard luck. You know, John Thomas was just unlucky. It's just, look, it happened to me, but I was lucky. I was in the right side of the misfortune. Do you know what I mean? And John Thomas was a brilliant man, and geez, what a marvelous horseman. He rarely got a fall. He rarely, if ever, got falls. Like, you know, he didn't get that many falls. But that's the problem with a good rider like that, is when you do get a fall, you're going to get a proper one. You know, you don't get soft falls, because John Thomas rarely got falls. He got falls, I don't know if he ever was out injured, you know, or you'd notice him out injured, you know. And he was unlucky. But as regards fear, I've no fear of a horse whatsoever. I've no fear of riding a horse. I've no fear of jumping a horse.
Fear of the falls?
No. The falls never bothered me. You know, it's not the falls. It's the only time you have a fear. The only time fear comes into it if a horse is out of control.
Okay.
If a horse runs free or if he's doing way too much, like, that's where fear comes in, because what happens then is fences come up really quick and he's just booting them out in front of him. Like, that's just brain dead. Like, it's brain dead from a horse, and even from a rider. If a rider is riding like that, if he's riding stupidly down to obstacles, that's where the fear comes for me. But when it's all under control and you know exactly what's happening, and okay, not all the time you're under control, but you can adjust things, and a horse has a brain that he'll figure it out for himself. It's the horse with no brain you'd get a fright off of.
Could you pull them up, or is it even too difficult?
Well, you can pull them up, because it's your job is to get them from A to B to,
yes,
try and win the race.
Okay.
And pulling them up is not going to teach them. So if it's not happening, you have to teach them to make it happen the next day. You know, because you're going to ride them again, and you can't just keep going out doing the same thing. So if you're not helping the horse to learn, then he's not going to learn and he's not going to win, and it's pointless him being in training, you know, him being a racehorse. So you have to teach him, and a lot of the time they figure it out.
Okay.
You know, they will figure it out, and they'll figure out that it's easier to do it. There's easier ways of doing it, you know.
So what's the body gone through? How many injuries? What's the catalogue of injuries?
Oh, Jeannie, I never really counted, but a lot. From pretty much my feet to my top of my head.
You broke your neck.
I broke my neck, my face.
Punctured lung.
My lungs, my shoulders, my arms, my backside.
Broken legs.
I've broken vertebrae down low. I've bruised my heart. Teeth, very little of my teeth are my own. My legs, my ankles, I've dislocated my ankles, my hands, dislocated my thumbs. Them bones across the back of my hand, I've pretty much broken all of them. Both collarbones, eye sockets, cheekbones. Pretty much everything, my toes, like, and the simplest things of hitting a railing, like, do you know what I mean? That's how you break your toe, like, do you know what I mean? So, you know, my shin, both my fibia and tibia on both side. I've dislocated both ankles. My wrist, I just get an awful lot of problem with my wrists. I've steel in both arms. Nothing hugely major.
Do you have a lot of residual pain?
You get used to it. Your first break, you would see the blood drain from your face, like, that's sore. Like, but I was lucky enough, I broke my collarbone when I was small, when I was younger, and it just, I don't know. Sometimes, even when you don't break, something can be sorer than an actual break, like a good kicking now, you know, when you get booted down in front of, you know, four or five horses might catch you. They can be sore, like if stitches all over my face, you know, my teeth came out through my gum. Things like that can be sore, like, do you know what I mean?
But you seem to... Are you not walking around now, though, with a little affliction here or there all the time?
Not really.
No?
No, I'm happy enough.
Did you get used to the pain? Did you get immune to it?
Yeah, you get used to it. Yeah, you get used to it. Once you don't move... Look, the beauty of our sport is that they're on us within seconds. Mm. You know, and if you have a broken bone, someone gets you within seconds, they give you a painkiller and it's discomfort. More so than that, we've access to the best surgeons in the world, basically, especially the guys that looked after me. You know, I had Tygo Shea and Tygo Sullivan was brilliant to me. You know, Paddy, the surgeon up in Dublin.
I know his name, but
Paddy, he knows who he is, and
Adrian McGoldrick and
Jennifer Pugh and Adrian McGoldrick, like they've transformed what jockeys have to go through. Like they're just fantastic, both of them in their own right. Even in England, when I punctured my lung, I just got the best of care. Brilliant surgeons. When I had to get operated on my lungs, like Lars Nolke is, you know, a top pneumothoric surgeon. It's just so you get over and you move on, and you know, we're just very well looked after.
Is everything you've said about your body and what you went through as a jockey reflective of this being an addiction and obsession?
Yeah, but I don't want to do anything else. I can't really do anything else.
Okay.
So, like, you know, you get over fairly fast when you want to do it. And I really, really wanted to do it. You know, there was nothing else I wanted to do when you ride horses.
Was it the riding of the horse or was it the winning?
A bit of both. It was started with the riding of the horse, but the winning is definitely a bonus. And then there's a check at the end of the month. And it wasn't even the money. It was a comfort of knowing that you were getting paid. Do you know what I mean? But basically, you do it without the money if you had to, you know. But really, we deserve every penny we get.
Absolutely, yeah. you do. You talk about the fun of being a rider. The wasting part, was that less fun?
Yeah, that wasn't. There's zero fun in that now.
Is that the worst part?
Yes, without doubt. I'd take all the injuries all over again, but the wasting.
So maybe kind of chronicle that for us. What would be a normal week?
Early in my career, I was worse. I just felt I had to be. Like, I was 9:13 one day in Limerick. And to be honest, like, I was fit for nothing, you know. So I wasn't eating and I was sweating really hard, both in the bath and in the sauna. And then when I did eat, I ate rubbish.
Because, chocolate or?
Yeah, I needed the rush. Crisps. I was just so flat. Like, it's like someone, you know, they just get, you get drained and you get a bit of sugar into your system and you go again, you know. But I was getting drained rock bottom. And it's the actual weight of the food that I was worried about. So I couldn't sit down and eat a plate of spuds and steak because it was heavier than an actual bar of chocolate. So it wasn't the calories, you know, the calories didn't bother, were of no significance because you'd work them off so fast. But it was the actual weight. So if I was doing really light and say I was doing 10.9 or something or 10.7 or 10.6 and I was doing 12 stone for the rest of the day, I could drink a bottle of water and the weight of the bottle of water would transfer onto the scales for the rest of the day, you know. So I could be 9.6 stripped, I'd drink a bottle of water and the weight of the bottle of water would just add onto the scales. And that's how I used to live my life early on. I would just starve myself, sweat it out, then eat rubbish, and then it was just up and down and up and down all week long. And the problem with Ireland is, like, you get Monday and Tuesday off, maybe Wednesday off from racing, and then you race Thursday, and then there's no racing Friday, and you have Saturday and Sunday then to get back down again. And it was just kind of up and down, up and down.
What's your natural weight?
Which is, I don't know, I'm heavy now. I'd say I'm 13 stone, I'd say. Okay. Yeah, I'm all at 13 stone, I'd say, yeah.
So a couple of boiled eggs maybe sorted you out then later in your career?
Yeah, it got easier. It definitely got easier when I started eating more, but eating the correct things.
Yes.
And my weight rose a little bit, and so I was comfortable to do, where sometimes I used to struggle to do 10-10, I used to do 10-10 quite easy when I was eating that little bit more, not wasting as much, and eating better food, basically. Yeah.
When you're in the early part of your career and you're not eating well and you're wasting, does it affect you in a finish? Does it affect your strength in a race? Or does adrenaline kick in?
I don't think it affects you in a finish. I think it affects your decisions more so than anything else. Mm. You may not. I tell you what I used to do is I used to kind of concentrate on the wrong things. Whereas when I wasn't thinking about my weight or anything, I could ride a normal race and just jump out the gate and ride a normal race. But when I was wasting, I could do queer things on a horse now, yeah.
Would you drive you mad? Would you get moody, cranky?
Oh, yeah, moody, Jesus. Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. But it wasn't that, it was like, if you said that was a cream couch, I'd say, no, it's more green than cream. Do you know, I just disagree with someone for the sake of it.
So how did Adele manage with that?
She was lucky enough. She was later on. I'd say it was other people that bore the brunt of that. I just warned her. I warned her, just, you know, things mightn't be like, you know, you might not be better. You're better off staying away this weekend or something. And when I was on my own, I was fine. It was just when I was in company, and then I used to go out much. I could never, and then I stopped going out completely, because when I go out, I want to enjoy myself. And I just didn't bother going out because I couldn't enjoy myself.
Did it affect your relationships in racing? The fact that this was driving you mad a bit?
Yeah, I suppose people probably had a different view of me than the actual person I was. Yes. As such, you know. And there was no time off, you see. You know, it's full on 12 months of the year, no matter what. You know, now there are a couple of breaks in between, you know, a week or 10 days breaks in between. But back then there was no break. You know, you just took your holiday and that was it. And I never really took a holiday because I was trying to be champion jockey and I needed every winner.
This is the Racing Pod and Off the Ball. If you've been listening to the free version of the podcast, we're leaving you here. But if you're looking for the full 1 hour interview with Davy Russell, go to offtheball.com/join to subscribe and get the full podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll speak to you, Johnny and myself, next week.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.